This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. As part of our Outlook season here on the pod, this week we're talking about the year ahead for active fixed income. Most notably, we'll be focusing on how the current rally in bond markets is shaping our views as we head into 2024. We'll be looking at how the active fixed income team is positioned for duration, and we'll also be pondering where next for credit spreads and valuations. I'm Frances Watson, Content Manager here at LGIM, and I'm delighted to be joined by Colin Reedy, Head of Active Strategies. Colin, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Frances. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Now, look, as we head towards the end of 2023, Santa has been more than generous, I think, this year, hasn't he? And bond prices have rallied both at the short and long end. I mean, is that optimism, Colin, likely to be maintained, do you think, as we head into 2024?
He has indeed. I think the key question is whether the US slows next year with or without a recession. That's the key macro risk for 2024 and the one that all market returns will effectively hinge on. But yes, we have to acknowledge the pretty ecstatic rally that we've seen across all asset classes in November and into December now. We were of the opinion that we were almost out of economic data points that could radically change the market views. But obviously, we've had a big boost from the Fed overnight, which has given momentum another big shove. I think if we step back from sort of year end liquidity and you know pretty extreme moves, The fundamental story that's been driving the rally is all inflation based. Inflation still packs a punch. We have enjoyed lower inflation outcomes around the world, and that has allowed both markets and central banks to effectively collectively downgrade the risk that inflation remains a possible sticky problem for a longer period of time, or indeed remains a problem that needs to be met with more sort of drastic monetary policy tightening or rate hikes. I think also the fact that the data, you know, has been most positive in the US, where we've also seen a significant weakening of inflationary pressure without much let up in growth. Is very significant here. Markets are very, very US-led, very, very US-centric. So I think that last point matters quite a lot.
Now, let's just pick up on inflation, because, of course, and you've alluded to Jay Powell and what he said overnight, Colin, about as I understand it, he's not going to wait until inflation gets back to the 2% target, but he is going to ease ahead of that. And that kind of sets the whole tone, doesn't it, for interest rates going into the next year, that the market actually thinks we have reached peak rates and their next move is down. So with that in mind, where does that leave your positioning then as a team on duration?
So nobody knows how interest rates will pan out over the course of next year. I certainly can't tell you, and I would also advise that, you know, anyone who tells you exactly where things are going or does so with a tremendously high degree of conviction should be automatically not listened to. But we can say something about what we think the key questions for interest rates will be and how we approach them as investors. And those are: one, did we make it all the way or did inflation get stuck? Two, you know, something blows up in the face of those higher rates. And three, you know, governments show restraint, particularly from a sort of fiscal perspective. So did we make it all the way or did inflation get stuck? The data has come a long, long way since the beginning of the year. We're now in a much more comfortable place where, you know, the markets can genuinely believe in an immaculate disinflation, which was so skeptically talked about not that long ago. that would still leave plenty of room for interest rates to rally. But we think the sort of potential lies probably a little bit further down the curve and less so in shorter dated fixed income instruments. To get a lot of movement in short dates, you would have to have a poorer economic outcome in the US. You would need to see material US sort of growth weakness. What happens if we get stuck here? You know, if inflation progress kind of stalls, we think that scenario likely results in a more sort of benign run-up in interest rates than we've seen in the past. It won't be a vicious sell-off. We're much less likely to see the acceleration to new highs that have characterized much of the past few years. And just one final point on inflation. We don't think anyone is good at forecasting inflation, ourselves included. So the more we see the market acting as if inflation is soon to be a done deal and we can move on from that, the less comfortable we are actually holding sort of large amounts of duration, and that would just be a one-way position that would continue to pay off. And then the third question, that something blows up, you know, obviously interest rates will rally if something does so, and has got economic implications. As long as we have late cycle indicators, which is principally very tight labour markets, the economic models will continue to flag the risk of recession. That's probably not going away. We can't really say with any confidence whether something will blow up and bring the economy down, but we can say that real interest rates are unusually high relative to real growth, and we think that's sort of unsustainable. The current real interest rates are unsustainably high without pickups in productivity or all the rest of it. And that's an area that we're spending quite a lot of our research efforts focusing on. You know, governments show restraint. You know, investors have paid lots of lip service to the idea that the era of really low inflation and really low rates is now over. But we haven't, I don't think, seen much evidence of asset allocators meaningfully changing the way they construct portfolios, in particular the way they use fixed income within their portfolios. So lots and lots of talk about fiscal policy, you know, the cost of decarbonisation, deglobalization as the sort of change makers there, but so far it's really been only talk.
It sounds, so what you're saying is that you know, here we are sitting here at the end of this you know, big rally, but it sounds as though whilst maybe short term you're optimistic, longer term going into 2024 you're quite a bit more cautious than some of your peers are.
I think that the rally that we've seen, that ecstatic move that we've seen into the run-up, has probably spent or pre-spent some of the gains that people would have been expecting for 2024. I think where we will, if it carries on into the year end, where we will start next year introduces, you know, skews to the downside. I don't think anyone would argue with two points, that A, a soft landing is very positive for risk assets, and B, it's largely priced now. You don't really get people talking about hard landings or anything nasty happening at the moment in markets, which that means the sort of 2024 probability weighted return distribution is probably skewed to the downside.
Yeah, and I want to pick you up, Colin, on the starting yields going into 2024, because of course if we'd been recording this in October we would have said, oh, 5%, how lovely, on the income front, wouldn't we? Now we're recording it in December when Treasury yields are what, just dip below the 4%.
Indeed.
That means that the starting yields going into 2024 are not as large as they were. So where do you see, you know, you've given us a flavour of they could widen out a little bit going into the new year, but how does this all leave the capital preservation argument of the bonds? Because of course bonds made up of total return, we've got the income side, we've got the capital side. Where do you see that going?
The income in fixed income still looks appealing, sort of relative to recent history. But I suppose that's just another way of saying that cash looks attractive. You can increase the income on your cash by investing in corporate credit. But you know, to go further, you need sort of capital appreciation. There are obviously two ways you can achieve that capital appreciation: by interest rates coming in lower than they're currently priced, and by credit spreads coming in tighter than they're currently priced. You know, we like rates when real rates are this high, and we think there's scope for capital appreciation from rates. I would highlight inflation-linked bonds, particularly in this context. To the riskier end of the spectrum, credit is well priced, is how I would describe it. We neither love nor hate credit spreads at current levels, and that's reflected in where they're trading within the range. But we're pretty confident that in most of the scenarios where credit has the potential to create large capital losses, duration will create meaningful capital gains. So you'll get that that offsetting benefit that you can enjoy with fixed income. So we are, in that context, much happier holding, you know, fixed income here over cash.
Does that mean overall, and what you've just said, means that you're happy enough with valuations at these levels?
They are priced for that soft landing. So were that narrative to change, then you would obviously focus your attention initially on the riskier end of your credit portfolios in IG, high yield, and EMD. But yes, I think where we are at the moment is I think credit accurately reflects the current consensus narrative. It's, you know, not too hot, not too cold. There is value to be there, but in the context of a better sort of backdrop for fixed income generally.
Okay, should we talk about volatility? Because we've kind of alluded it mm-hmm. to it already, haven't we? And of course, this year it's been the year of the change of narrative almost, haven't we? Because we've gone from a recession planned for early 2023. To no recession somewhere around the summer, I think that was, to the current narrative of peak rates, possibly followed, you know, as you say, by the soft landing. So where next for 2024 then, Colin? Are we going to see these big bouts of volatility in your view?
It's really interesting, actually, because we're entering 2024 with a similarly strong consensus to 2023. It's not the same consensus as it was back then, but there's a similar combination of widely held views. Consistently taking contrarian views is seldom a long-term successful strategy, but when everyone's on the same side of the boat like that, there is potential for instability. The key difference between this year and last year, though, last year the consensus was that something was going to go wrong, mm-hmm. That dramatic events were on their way. It was only a matter of time. This year the consensus is closer to nothing's going to go bang or go wrong. And therefore, you know, the market is much more stable. And on most days, nothing sort of dramatic actually happens at the moment. So, you know, how can investors sort of contain volatility in their strategies? I think investors have to think very carefully about what the assumptions are in their asset allocation. What do they believe drives the relationships between different asset classes? What do they believe drives sort of financial returns? They almost need to dispense with the idea that asset allocation can ever be a sort of passive, steady thing. You're going to have to be much more active, we believe. You can, of course, allocate to a passive fund, but the decision about which passive fund to own is a very active decision. There's no passive option, I think, is the point I'm trying to make.
And so what you're summarizing is, with volatility comes opportunity.
Yes, I've got an old saying about volatility. It's a bit like cholesterol. There's good volatility and there's bad volatility. The latter is when it all gets systemic and something goes wrong or bang. But what we have here is good volatility. There are opportunities for active managers in this environment who are set up with that sort of forward-looking piece front and center.
Okay, well, you've talked about what could go wrong. You've talked about sort of blow-ups and bangs. Can you just give us a little bit more meat on the bones there then, Colin? I mean, it's impossible, isn't it, to say, well, of course, if we had a crystal ball, this is what's going to go wrong in 2024. But in terms of where you could see left-field events coming from, how would you detail those?
It's being increasingly discussed that we're entering a period where a substantial proportion of the world's population and the world's GDP will go to the polls to vote. There are some scenarios that would be genuinely market moving in that environment. Again, we come back to the US as the key driver of global markets. If we had a downside surprise in the US economy or that soft landing narrative started to be threatened, that would be an extremely challenging political environment for any incumbent US president seeking a second term. I think you have to go back to Calvin Coolidge 1924 to the last US president who managed to secure a second term with their economy in recession. That obviously raises the prospect or the possibility of a second Trump presidency with everything that would come from a more organized and prepared Trump White House. And it's definitely worth debating and discussing what that would look like, because unlike 2016, where they did not expect to win, they were not ready,
not at all.
They were not prepared. Mm. This time they will be, and you know, it's unlikely that their agenda has changed significantly. It's just to be much more organised in how they're going to execute, and that's got a myriad of different implications for markets. So there's that. I would say all the tail events away from the US economy, you know, buckling under the weight of higher real rates, higher rates, it would be in that geopolitical postcode where, you know, we are being buffeted, you know, on an almost daily basis with new news flow.
Yeah, gosh, 2024 is going to be eventful, it sounds, if nothing else.
Well, it's we keep sort of summing up every year, certainly since the pandemic, by saying, wow, what a year.
Yeah.
I can't remember a year like that. You eventually have to stop saying that when you're doing it for the third year on the trot.
I know. Well, it sounds as though you need a well-deserved break. Of course, Christmas holidays are coming up soon. How will you be winding down? Will it be with a glass of something, with a good book? Are you going to watch a film? What are you going to do?
Hopefully all of the above at some point. We've busy festive period. Very much looking forward to it. I am currently chewing through a book called 4,000 Weeks. 4,000 Weeks is the average length of time of the average human life, effectively. And it sort of breaks things down and discusses our relationship with time and how we should best use it. And it's not a productivity enhancing book. It's not about how you can squeeze more into a 24-hour period. It's much more thoughtful and holistic than that. It really sort of forces you to step back and analyze your relationship with time. And I'm actually quite enjoying the questions that it's forcing me to ask myself.
That sounds an interesting read. I might delve into that myself after I've collapsed after cooking the turkey. Anyway, Colin, I think we've come to the end of our podcast. It just remains for me to say thank you very much for all your insights today. And if you, as listeners, have enjoyed this outlook, you can hear the last of our outlooks in January 2024, where we will be talking about the outlook for real assets. In the meantime, we're going to take a short break on the pod, but we will be back with our first episode of Market Talk in the first week of January. Until then, from Colin and me, a very happy and safe holidays and a happy new year. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.